20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers Nation? Happy Monday. Happy Memorial Day. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here today. Full disclosure, I am recording this on Friday as well. Just trying to get a little family time this weekend, which I'm very, very much looking forward to on this holiday. So recording a couple of these in advance, I appreciate you bearing with me. I'm expecting not a ton of movement, which is maybe my famous last words, and maybe I'll have to do like three emergency episodes with all the breaking news we're going to have this weekend, but should be a fairly nondescript weekend, all things considered. And what we're going to be doing today is going over some of the key roster battles that are going to take place all over this roster, whether it be offense, defense, whether it be, you know, starting spots, whether it be back of the roster battles. We're going to go through absolutely everything today. So I'll say once again, thanks so much for being here. We're going to jump into everything right away. Per usual, you know how we do this. We usually go quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, offensive line, defensive line, edge, linebacker, corner, safety. And that's exactly how we're going to do it today. We'll start with quarterback. There's no doubt at number one. There's no doubt at number two. This is a true number three quarterback battle. And there's a few different things that are on the line here. And I just want to take a pause too and just say, we're going to look at this from like a who's maybe the most likely just to win it from like a talent standpoint and things like that. But this is your first time to one of these. We look at everything. We're going to be looking at the age, the contract, the years of team control, all those other like ancillary factors that can very much make a huge difference into which direction Green Bay goes to keep some of these players that are on the fringes. Obviously, when you get to some of the starting battles, it's a little bit different, but when it gets to actual roster battles for who makes the team, we're going to dig into all of that as well. At quarterback, as mentioned, that number three quarterback battle, you've got Taylor Algirsma, and then you've got Sean Clifford. That's what we're looking at quarterback. Number one, number two are all set. There's no competition. There's no debate. There's no battle there. I don't think there's anything Sean Clifford can do, and I don't think there's anything Taylor Algirsma can do to get into the backup quarterback conversation, barring some team blowing Green Bay away with a trade offer from Malik Willis, and I just don't think that's within the realm of reason or possibility. So here's what we're looking at here. Taylor Algirsma has every possible advantage in the book, other than the fact that Sean Clifford was actually a draft pick and Taylor Algirsma was an undrafted free agent tryout player, right? That's about the only thing Clifford has going for him. Algirsma is 3 years younger. He is under team control for this year and the next 2 years. And then even after that would be a restricted free agent. And he is cheaper than Sean Clifford as well. It's everything you're looking for. Cheaper, younger, arguably probably a higher upside potentially as well. At least a little bit more of an unknown there where Sean Clifford's already been released from the team in the past. Sean Clifford has experience. This will be his third year in the Matt LaFleur offense, but there's probably a limit. There's a limit to the ceiling for Sean Clifford. And with Taylor Algirsma, he's a little bit more of an unknown, a little bit more of a mystery box. And that's probably better. Like even if Algirsma is worse, like if it's close, but he's worse, you probably take a little bit more of the mystery box, the unknown with Algirsma, knowing that like, hey, maybe around the bend, there's something better. Whereas with Clifford, now going into year three, you kind of know what you got. There's always a surprise here or there. You never quite know for sure. But barring some sort of breakout performance from Clifford, we probably already know exactly who he is. And there's not a ton of mystery there. The mystery for Algirsma actually probably helps him. Now, I don't expect either of these players, barring an unbelievable preseason from either, specifically probably Algirsma, I don't think either of these players are going to make the 53. I think this will be practice squad possibilities and opportunities, and they'll battle it out. There is a world in which you could potentially keep both. We heard from Justice Mosqueda the other day that you could use the roster exemption for an international player on Algirsma instead of Alex Hale. I think if he does make it to the practice squad, there is a strong chance that that's exactly what will happen. And because of that, you could still keep Sean Clifford as the, you know, a quarterback on the practice squad as well. If I'm Sean Clifford and some other team is willing to offer me a practice squad spot, I probably need to see the writing on the wall, meaning they cut me last year, they cut me this year, they went out and they kept Taylor Algirsma on the roster already. I know this story already. I need to go find another team where maybe I can fit their offense a bit better, and maybe it's a better situation for me. We'll see what happens there, but this will be an interesting preseason battle. My guess is that you're not going to see Jordan Love much, if at all. My guess is you're going to see a decent amount of Malik Willis, and then probably a lot of Sean Clifford with a little bit of Taylor Algirsma sprinkled in, especially maybe in that third preseason game, that final preseason game. Maybe you see a little bit more of him. But there is a possibility that Clifford just gets way more opportunity here than Algirsma, again, especially knowing the offense. And the key piece that's important there is, in order to evaluate the running backs, receivers, tight ends, offensive linemen, you might need to play Clifford, who can probably just get everything set up a little bit easier and better than maybe what Algirsma can. So that could lead to Clifford getting, again, a little bit more of an opportunity. But that's your quarterback battle. I'll say it one more time. Youth, cost, and team control are all on Taylor Algirsma's side, as is a little bit more of the unknown. Running back three is the next one. We've talked about this one already. Emmanuel Wilson versus Chris Brooks. It is worth mentioning here that they could keep both. This does not have to be a situation in which it's one or the other. There could be a world in which they keep four running backs. In fact, if I were making my prediction today, or if you want to go back and listen to my 53-man roster prediction from a couple weeks ago, that's exactly what I did. I just think both of them are good running backs. I think you got Marshawn Lloyd kind of coming back year two, a little bit more unknown because he didn't get to play last year. You probably don't want Josh Jacobs carrying quite as much of a load as he did a season ago. I think both Wilson and Brooks bring enough different to the table, and they're both super cheap, that I do think it makes sense. But if we do get into this situation where you're keeping Lloyd, you're keeping Jacobs, and you only have one spot left, the battle between Wilson and Brooks is massively intriguing. I don't know who would have the advantage here. Brooks is ever so slightly younger. They cost the exact same, and both would be restricted free agents next offseason. There's no team control advantage. There's no cost advantage. And again, Brooks is just slightly younger than Wilson. There's no real advantage here either way. This is a true mano-a-mano battle. Who's the better running back? And even that in and of itself is just probably a difference of style more than anything else. What do you want on this team? And I think this goes advantage Chris Brooks slightly, despite the fact that I think Emmanuel Wilson is the better running back. I actually think Emmanuel Wilson is quite good. And maybe that's just the decision. Maybe they realize, hey, we've got a good running back here in Wilson. We like Brooks, but there's no real like major upside there. We're just going to go with the better guy, and that's Emmanuel Wilson. But the reason I say Brooks is because if you need to hand off the ball, which is what Wilson's best at, get the ball in his hands. He's got good speed, good toughness, pretty good vision. Like you hand him the ball and usually good things are going to happen. But if you're handing off the ball, you're giving it to Josh Jacobs or Marshawn Lloyd first and foremost. That's who you want to hand the ball off to. You really don't want to get to a point where, you're going to your third option to hand off the ball. What you want that third running back for is pass protection and catching out of the backfield and kind of the third down stuff. And quite frankly, Chris Brooks is just better at that stuff. He's a better pass protector. He's a better run blocker. He's a better receiver out of the backfield. He just gives you a little bit more of the other stuff where Jacobs and Lloyd are going to be your true runners. So if you want the versatility, if you want the do-it-all guy, you're going with Chris Brooks. If you want the better running back, the guy that with the ball in his hands is just better, you're going Emmanuel Wilson. But you don't really need that as a number three when you already have Lloyd and Jacobs on the roster. Even though I like Wilson better than Brooks, Brooks might just make a little bit more sense for what you need. My final answer here is I think they keep both. If they keep one, it's going to be massively interesting because you could have quite the battle and just styles and differences there. I should note as well, Amar Johnson and Jaylen White are on the roster as undrafted free agents as well. They could both get their name in the conversation. Marshawn Lloyd coming back from injury and just what he can bring to the table is going to be noteworthy as well. And I'll just add on top of that, there is a world with Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd is going to make this team. That is unquestionable, right? What Marshawn Lloyd has not done is, has unequivocal claim to the number two running back job. So Wilson and Brooks might be battling for who makes it as the number three running back because two of the spots are taken with Jacobs and Lloyd. But both of them could theoretically jump Marshawn Lloyd if Lloyd doesn't have a great camp. So Lloyd's making it, but he doesn't have undeniable claim to the number two spot. That's worth noting as well. And again, I'll say it one more time. It is possible that Lloyd, Jacobs, Wilson, and Brooks could all make the team. Next up is the top of the wide receiver depth chart. Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Romeo Dobbs, Savion Williams, and eventually Christian Watson when he comes back from injury. This is not who makes the team. These guys are all making the team barring a trade. That's out of the question. Meaning any of these guys getting cut or anything like that. So they're all on the team, but there will be a massive battle all season long for the pecking order on the depth chart and more specifically targets. Who gets open more? Who gets that connection with Jordan Love when it's third and eight, have to have it? Where's Jordan Love looking? Who's on the field? Who gets outside? Who gets slot reps? Those are all up for grabs. And again, you have Matthew Golden, a first round pick, that's going to come in and challenge everyone at every spot. Jaden Reed primarily probably going to be in the slot, but we'll see if he can get more involved on the outside. Dontavian Wicks was the most targeted receiver a year ago. Romeo Dobbs seems to have that connection most with Jordan Love. And Savion Williams might be the most talented wide receiver of the group, which is a crazy thing to say. But I think it's true. And plus, then you get Christian Watson back at some point. That is going to be an old-fashioned battle. And if Hardman, Heath, or Melton make it, that's not nothing either. Those guys have all found ways on the field in the last couple seasons. I should say Melton and Heath have, and Hardman was brought in for a reason. Like, they like him. The amount of targets that are out there and the amount of mouths that they have to feed in this offense, it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough, and there's going to be a battle all year long to see who can get the primary targets and just get out on the field more and have more of those opportunities. And it is going to be a hard-fought battle all season long. We'll be right back. But at wide receiver, maybe the more interesting one to begin with is that potential number six wide receiver spot. Mecole Hardman versus Malik Heath versus Bo Melton. Now, a couple things here. Number one, they don't have to keep six. And I've proposed this idea in the past. If I'm Green Bay, and I want to keep another position somewhere else, I'm probably doing it because I feel like I can probably cut Heath, Melton, and Hardman and get at least one of them back in the practice squad. And that's really all I need. I feel very comfortable with Golden, Reed, Wicks, Dobbs, and Williams as my top five. They're getting all my targets anyway. If they're all healthy, I'm good with those five. I don't need another receiver on the depth chart. There's already too many mouths with those five to try to feed. I really don't need a sixth. And to make it one step further, Christian Watson's coming back at some point, and now I have six wide receivers, and there's already too many mouths to feed with that. So adding another is not necessary, but you probably would like at least one of them back on the practice squad that you could elevate in case of injury, especially until Christian Watson comes back from injury. But the fact that you have three of those guys, if you just had one, if you just had Hardman, Heath, or Melton, you probably want to keep them because there's a chance that you could cut them and they get claimed and now you've only got the five, right? But you have three. I mean, it's rare at least, but it's very rare that any team gets like two players claimed, much less three players claimed, much less three players claimed from the same position, wide receiver especially. There's just no chance. So you're probably going to get one of those guys, if not two of those guys, back in the practice squad, and then can call them up when you need them. And I think that makes all the sense. But if there is one spot available, and if it does come down to those three, this is another very interesting battle. Mecole Hardman's 27, Bo Melton's 26, Malik Heath is 25. So Heath has a slight advantage in age. Hardman is set to make $1.17 million, and then will be an unrestricted free agent in the offseason. Malik Heath and Bo Melton are both set to make $1.03 million, a little bit less than Hardman, but not anywhere near enough to even really talk about it. But both of them will be set to make or be restricted free agents in the offseason. Now, that might seem better, and it is technically better than an unrestricted free agent, but unless either of them go out and have huge years, you're probably not tendering either of them as restricted free agents because you don't want to pay them $3 million plus or whatever. So you're going to rescind the restricted free agent tender, and they're just going to become unrestricted free agents anyway. So it is a nice insurance policy in case either of them break out in a major way, but the odds of that are really slim, especially with the wide receiver depth chart the way that it is. So the difference in cost is extremely minimal, and Heath and Melton are the same. And in all likelihood, all three of them become unrestricted free agents anyway, although there is that insurance there as a restricted free agent for Heath and Melton if either of them break out. Again, Heath, the small advantage being 25, Melton 26, and Hardman 27. The potential deal breaker here, or the one that the differentiator, I should say, special teams. Mecole Hardman, probably the best punt returner on the team. That's even including Keyshawn Nixon. I think Hardman, just as a pure punt returner, is probably better. I think he's better than Jaden Reed. That could be his way on the roster. And then he could be kind of a gadget wide receiver, somebody with great speed on the outside if you need it, and a true punt returner. That could be the differentiator. Melton doesn't give you a ton on teams. He could be a kick returner, but he's probably like the fourth or fifth option at best. And Malik Heath, you know, gives you a little bit on teams, but not anything to really write home about. That could easily be the differentiator. Other than that, you have Malik Heath is the more possession receiver. Melton's the more, you know, well, both Melton and Hardman have speed, but Melton's kind of the Jaden Reed kind of insurance is how I would define it. And then Hardman's kind of the special teams, punt returner, gadgety guy. But you don't really need it because you got Reed and Savion Williams to do that stuff as well. This is a very interesting battle. Again, I would probably say, hey, we're going to release all three of you. We're going to try to get two of you back in the practice squad, but it's not exactly that easy. You still go through it. And if one of them just earns the job, they could still easily do that. It's also worth noting here that Julian Hicks, Jaden Yonke, and Cornelius Johnson all also on the team and could get their names in that conversation as well. Next up, tight end three. I think this is a battle between Ben Sims, John Fitzpatrick, and Messiah Swinson. They also have Johnny Lumpkin on the team. I don't think he's going to get in that conversation. I think this is Sims v. Fitzpatrick, and possible that Swinson could get his name in that conversation as well. They're all 25 years old. All three of them at this moment are all 25 years old. So there's not a major difference in age. Fitzpatrick is set to cost $1.13 million. They've already paid any signing bonuses and things like that, so it's all sunk cost anyway. So Fitzpatrick, $1.13 million. Sims, $1.03 million. Swinson, $960,000. Again, we're talking about less than a couple hundred thousand here. So there is a small differentiator in cost, but nothing exorbitant and nothing that probably swings it in an aggressive way. If all three are created equal and you feel that Fitzpatrick and Sims and Swinson are all the same, then it maybe is a differentiator. And in that case, Swinson would have a small advantage, but it's probably not enough to really be noteworthy. The contract, you know, just the ability to keep the players and the contract, how it works in the future and the controllable years is much more interesting. Fitzpatrick next year would be an unrestricted free agent. Ben Sims would be a restricted free agent, where Messiah Swinson would be an exclusive rights free agent, which is a player or a team option on a 1-year vet minimum deal, none guaranteed. So Green Bay, if all things are created equal, they're all the same age. Swinson makes the least and is under true team control on a super cheap contract next year. Sims being restricted, like we talk about with the receivers, isn't really anything to write home about because you're going to rescind it. He's going to become unrestricted, and Fitzpatrick will be unrestricted as well. So from a purely contractual standpoint, Messiah Swinson has the advantage here. He's the cheapest, albeit barely, and he has the most real team control with a super cheap contract next year as well. So that's his advantage. Other than that, this probably comes down to two things. Who's the best blocking tight end and who can go out and maybe be useful on special teams as well. That's going to be the battle. I am intrigued by it. I do think Fitzpatrick is probably the leader in the clubhouse here, and he was ahead of both Sims and Swinson. Swinson was a practice squad guy. Sims had been the number two / number three all year long. When Musgrave was out, he was the two. And then he got deactivated by the end of the year, and Fitzpatrick was active. Plus, they brought back Fitzpatrick, gave him a little bit of signing bonus as well, which is noteworthy. And again, I think he's the leader in the clubhouse, but all things created equal, Messiah Swinson does have some advantages here as well. And they have put a couple of years into Ben Sims, and he's got some opportunity. And I actually think Ben Sims of the three is the most talented of the three. He didn't show it last year. He did down year last year, had a lot of opportunity to take that position and really earn it by being the number two when Musgrave was out, and really just couldn't do anything with it, which was a little bit disappointing. This should be a fun battle to keep an eye on. Left tackle, Rashid Walker versus Jordan Morgan versus Anthony Belton. I think this probably comes down to Walker and Morgan, but can't rule out Belton entirely. And then right guard, Sean Ryan versus Jordan Morgan versus Anthony Belton. I think this is probably Ryan versus Belton, but can't rule out Morgan entirely at that spot either. Not much to add here, other than I think these are very intriguing battles. I've gone on record already to say I think Rashid Walker and Jordan Morgan are going to rotate at left tackle. I think Sean Ryan and Anthony Belton are going to rotate at right guard, but there is a lot of ball game left, as Aaron Nagler would say, and that could go in a million different directions. Best five out on the field, as we know, they are apt to say, and they usually back it up, but those are going to be two very unique offseason battles. Maybe the most important ones on the team when it comes to actually starting spots and who they put at left tackle and who they end up with at right guard. Meanwhile, on the offensive line, you have 2 to 3 offensive line spots up for grabs. You have 7 that are taken. Your 5 starters, and then the 2 of the guys that we just mentioned, if Morgan and Belton aren't the starters, then they're your next 2 up, right? You've got 7, and then you have 2 to 3 spots remaining along the offensive line. I think the most likely ones that are going to compete for it are John Williams, Jacob Monk, Travis Glover, Kadeem Telfort, Tyler Cooper, and Donovan Jennings. You also have J.J. Lippe, Trey Hill, and Brant Banks. I think those 3 are a little bit on the less likely side. Not impossible, but less likely. And I think you have 2 to 3 spots for Williams, Monk, Glover, Telfort, Cooper, and Jennings. Here's the breakdown. John Williams is 23, as is Jacob Monk. Travis Glover's 24. Tyler Cooper's 24. Donovan Jennings is 25. Kadeem Telfort is 26. John Williams, Tyler Cooper, and Donovan Jennings are set to make $840,000. Jacob Monk, Travis Glover, and Kadeem Telfort are all set to make $960,000, $120,000 more than Williams, Cooper, or Jennings. The team control is a massive difference. John Williams, after this year, has 3 years of super cheap team control on his 4-year deal, right? So 3 years left after this year. Jacob Monk will have 2 years left. Travis Glover has 2 years left. Tyler Cooper has 2 years left and then is a restricted free agent. Meanwhile, Donovan Jennings and Kadeem Telfort would be exclusive rights free agents next year and then restricted free agents the year after that. To put this in its easiest terms, all of these guys are workable, right? They're all cheap enough. They're all young enough. They all have some form of talent. They're all competitive here for the spots, and they all have enough team control. Nobody's an unrestricted free agent next year, that this will ultimately go to the best players that are on the roster. But John Williams, by far and away, has the biggest advantages here. He and Jacob Monk are the youngest. He, Tyler Cooper, and Donovan Jennings make the least. And John Williams has the most years of team control on super friendly team deals. So John Williams has all the advantages. Meanwhile, Kadeem Telfort is the least likely and has all of, not necessarily least likely from like, he has every right to still make the team, but he has all the disadvantages. He is the oldest one at age 26. He, Monk, and Glover make the most at $960,000, and he only has that exclusive rights free agent year. So 1 year left after this, him and Jennings are in that camp where everyone else has 2 years or more. So he is the least advantageous situation. Again, Kadeem Telfort, John Williams is the biggest or most advantageous situation of those offensive linemen. Again, Lippe, Hill, and Banks could get in the conversation as well, but likely 2 to 3 spots for Williams, Monk, Glover, Telfort, Cooper, and Jennings, with John Williams having the most advantages there. All right, defensive tackle number 4 and defensive tackle number 5. I think there's probably 2 spots available for Colby Wooden, Nasir Stackhouse, and Warren Brinson. James Esther, Nessa Jade Silvera, and Keith Oliver all potentially could get their names in those conversations as well, but likely 2 spots for Wooden, Stackhouse, and Brinson. Brinson and Stackhouse are 23 years old and rookies. Colby Wooden is in the 3rd year of his deal and is 24 years old. Not a huge difference in age. Meanwhile, Brinson and Stackhouse set to make $840,000. Colby Wooden, $1.03 million. So Wooden has the disadvantage from a monetary standpoint. Meanwhile, the team control is massive. Warren Brinson would have 3 more years of team control on a super cheap deal after this. Stackhouse would have 2 years and then would be a restricted free agent. Colby Wooden, only 1 year of team control left, and then would be an unrestricted free agent after that. Wooden was a 4th-round pick. Brinson was a 6th. Stackhouse was an undrafted free agent. This, again, ultimately will come down to who the best players are out on the field, but all things created equal, Brinson is the most advantageous, followed by Stackhouse. Wooden would find himself least so, making the most money, being the oldest, and having the least years of team control. All right, that brings us to defensive end. You could certainly talk about here starting defensive end, right? LVN, Brenton Cox, Kingsley Enagbare, Baron Sorrell, all could be in that conversation opposite Rashawn Gary. That will be worth keeping an eye on. But it's really that fifth and sixth defensive end spot. I'll note here once again, last year they kept six defensive ends. So both Kingsley Enagbare and Brenton Cox could both make this team as the fifth and sixth defensive ends. So that would bring you to Rashawn Gary, LVN, Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, Kingsley Enagbare, and Brenton Cox if they kept six. Definitely workable. Basically, same as last year, except it would be Baron Sorrell for Preston Smith, and it would be Colin Oliver for Aaron Mosby. Everything else would remain the same. I think the other four are locks, though, meaning Gary, LVN, Sorrell, and Colin Oliver. I don't think any of those four are going anywhere, which means if they do only keep five, this comes down to Kingsley Enagbare versus Brenton Cox, and this is an interesting conversation. Enagbare has been the one that they've played more. I thought Cox was better last year, specifically at the end of the year when they were both getting reps. I thought Cox was just clearly the better player. They're both 25 years old. Here's the big difference, though. Kingsley Enagbare is set to make $3.4 million. Brenton Cox is set to make $1.0 million. You have a $2.4 million difference here in contracts. Meanwhile, Kingsley Enagbare will be an unrestricted free agent next year. Brenton Cox will be a restricted free agent. If Brenton Cox would go out, have a big year this year, maybe even earn that starting job, which is not out of the realm of possibility, not likely, but not impossible, he could be in line for a bigger deal and he would be a restricted free agent next year. That is definitely a potential deciding point between him and Enagbare. Again, both could make it. The other thing I'll add here too is that Enagbare, I think, might legitimately have some trade value. So you could look at this and say they're the same age. You save $2.4 million by going with Brenton Cox. And we have team control with Brenton Cox. And we can get something in return for Enagbare where we probably wouldn't for Brenton Cox. That is a potential big difference there. I've said it with Justice. I've said it in a couple other episodes. I think if this decision is today, for me personally, I would keep Brenton Cox for all those reasons over Kingsley Enagbare. It could easily keep both. But if it had to be one or the other, I'm probably keeping Brenton Cox in large part due to the contract and the year of team control as well. And I just think Brenton Cox was better last year. That's also a very important aspect. Aaron Mosby, Deslin Alexander, and Jeremiah Martin all could get their names in that conversation as well. We'll be right back. Base linebacker, Isaiah McDuffie versus Tyron Hopper could take place. I think McDuffie is by far and away the leader in the clubhouse. But let's see what Hopper can do in year two, and if he can get his name in that conversation to be the strong side linebacker in the 4-3 next to Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper. That will be an interesting one if Hopper can get his name in the conversation. Meanwhile, you have 1 to 2 spots for the number 5 and 6 linebacker positions between Isaiah Simmons, Christian Welch, and Jabon Johnson. Big differences here. Maybe not so much in cost, but the other stuff is noteworthy. Jabon Johnson, only 23 years old, where Christian Welch and Isaiah Simmons are both 26. Jabon Johnson is 3 years younger than the other two. Meanwhile, Jabon Johnson only $840K, whereas Christian Welch makes $1.03 million and Simmons makes $1.17 million. Not a huge difference, but Jabon Johnson makes a little bit less. Meanwhile, Isaiah Simmons and Christian Welch would both be unrestricted free agents next year, whereas Jabon Johnson would have 2 years of team control and then would be a restricted free agent the year after that. Based on pure talent, I guess maybe talent's the wrong word, but experience, ready to play now, and special teams, Simmons and Welch have all the advantages here. But outside of that, Jabon Johnson, 3 years younger, is the cheapest and has way more team control. So that's not nothing either. There's potentially only one spot available here. I think Isaiah Simmons, clearly the leader in the clubhouse. If they keep two, the battle between Welch and Jabon Johnson after that is interesting. I think there's a really good chance that they would keep Jabon Johnson in that instance, just higher upside. But, and again, cheaper, younger, team control, all of it. But this will be a very interesting battle, especially if they only keep one, even if Isaiah Simmons is the most likely one there. All right, corner 4, 5, and 6. Question mark. This is either corner 4, 5, and 6 if Jair is gone, or corner 5 and 6 if Jair is back. But either way, Micah Robinson, Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, and Jonathan Baldwin in contention for either one, two, or three spots, depending on how many they keep and depending on if Jair Alexander's back or not. Tyron Herring, Gregory Jr., and Isaiah Dunn could also get their name in the conversation here as well. But we're going to stick with Robinson, Haddon, King, and Baldwin as the four we're breaking down here. Kalen King and Jonathan Baldwin, both 22 years old. Micah Robinson's 23. Kamal Haddon is 24. Here's the cool thing. They're all set to make $840K this year. There's no differentiator when it comes monetarily to what they're going to make this upcoming season. There is with years of team control. Micah Robinson, 3 years left of team control, is super cheap, right? Seventh round pick, 4 year contract. He'll have three super cheap years remaining, a huge advantage for him. Jonathan Baldwin, two super cheap years, and then will be a restricted free agent the year after that. Meanwhile, Haddon and King would be exclusive rights free agents next year. Again, 1 year team option, super cheap, and then restricted free agents the year after that. So Baldwin and King are youngest, although they're all 24 or under. They all make the same amount. Micah Robinson, most years of team control, followed by Baldwin, and then Kalen King and Kamal Haddon after that. This, in all likelihood, will come down to who plays best and special teams. The player that can go out and show that they are ready to make an impact on teams will have a massive advantage. Whether it's the fifth spot, the sixth spot, how many they keep, that's going to be the differentiator here. And I really, truly believe that, especially if Jair's back. You're not probably looking for somebody to come in and step in right away. You're looking for developmental traits and somebody who can be on teams. That's the goal. So for Robinson, Haddon, King, Baldwin, all young, all cheap, varying degrees of team control, but this probably comes down to especially special teams. And then just does any of them show some high-end upside, but you just don't want to let them go? That would be the other differentiator as well. Last but not least, you've got safety. You've got three locked in: Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard. You have one to two spots left, probably two. Zane Anderson, Ketanji Adapo, and Omar Brown, and maybe Kazir Brown could get his name in that conversation as well. I think this is probably easy. I think you keep five, and it's probably Zane Anderson and Ketanji Adapo, but let's break it down anyway, just in case. And Zane Anderson is an interesting one here. Zane Anderson, 28 years old. He is not young. All right. So he has been in the league for a while now. He was a little bit older coming out, and he is getting, for the Packers at least, you know, 28 didn't used to be old. 28 now is on the older side, which is kind of crazy to think about. Meanwhile, Ketanji Adapo and Omar Brown, both only 24 years old. Zane Anderson makes a little bit more at $1.03 million. Ketan and Omar are both at $960K. The big thing here is Ketanji Adapo has two more years of team control, whereas Omar Brown is an exclusive rights free agent, then a restricted free agent, whereas Zane Anderson is just a restricted free agent. I can't see Ketanji Adapo really going anywhere here. This is about as close to a lock as you can get. I think he's the fourth safety. He's young at 24, cheap at 960K, has 2 years of team control, and looked good when given the opportunity last year, and should be a good player on special teams. So if they keep five, this probably comes down to Zane Anderson versus Omar Brown. Maybe Kazir Brown can get his name there too. But if it's between the two, Brown is 4 years younger, is a little bit cheaper, and has the additional year of team control on a super cheap deal. So Omar Brown does have some advantages there. If Omar can show that he is ready to step up, and I like Omar Brown, by the way, and show that he's ready on special teams, he could get his name in that real conversation to be the number five guy. I just think Zane Anderson's better. He looked good when he got the playing time against Detroit last year. He's been good on special teams. I think they keep Zane Anderson, but Omar Brown will have some say in that as well. Those are your roster battles for 2025 as we get ready for OTAs, as we get ready for minicamp and eventually training camp, preseason, etc. These are the ones to keep an eye on. Malik Willis versus Taylor Algersma, Emmanuel Wilson versus Chris Brooks, the battle for the wide receiver targets at the top of the wide receiver depth chart, Hardman versus Heath versus Melton, Sims versus Fitzpatrick versus Swinson at tight end, the battle for left tackle between Walker, Morgan, and Belton, the battle for right guard between Ryan, Morgan, and Belton, the 2 to 3 offensive line spots up for grabs between John Williams, Jacob Monk, Travis Glover, Kadeem Telfort, Tyler Cooper, and Donovan Jennings. The probably two defensive tackle spots up for grabs, likely between Colby Wooden, Nasir Stackhouse, and Warren Brinson. Starting defensive end between LVN, Brenton Cox, Kingsley Enagbare, and Baron Sorrell. The fifth defensive end spot between Kingsley Enagbare and Brenton Cox. Again, they could potentially keep both, but if they keep only one, it could come down to Enagbare and Cox for that last spot. Isaiah McDuffie versus Tyron Hopper for base 4-3 linebacker. Isaiah Simmons, Christian Welch, and Jamon Johnson battling out for one or two off-ball linebacker spots. Micah Robinson, Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, and Jonathan Baldwin fighting it out for either one, two, or three cornerback jobs. And then Zane Anderson, Ketan Oladapo, and Omar Brown likely battling it out for two safety spots. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. I'll be right back here tomorrow with an all-new show. You're not going to want to miss it. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. See you guys soon. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Koner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle-Stinkel, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.